Good evening. It is that time for us to go ahead and get started tonight. I've had a couple people ask me already. Yes, we did turn the lights down, just one click. But if you guys start falling asleep, I'll start throwing psalm books. And if that doesn't work, then we'll just turn the lights back up. But you can't hear me. I'm on. Well, I will try to talk louder for you. Yes, ma'am. So this week we start off our new quarter. And this quarter we're going to be doing something a little bit different than we normally do. We're going to be rotating through a summer series. And we've done this before here at Cary. And so this isn't totally new, but this is new from last quarter. We're going to be having this class, and we're going to go through a book, and we're going to have multiple men come in to teach. So the good news is, if you don't like me, come back next week. Somebody much better is going to be doing the class. If you don't like him, come back the next week. Someone even better will be doing the class. But anyway, before we get started, I asked Mr. Shambly if he would to start us off with a prayer. Thank you, Tom. So this quarter, the text we're going to be using is The Glorious Gospel by a fellow named Mac Lyon. If you're old enough, maybe you remember him being on television every Sunday. If you're not quite that old, maybe you remember your grandparents watching him on television every Sunday. That's how I know who he is. But he was in The Search of the Lord's Way before Phil Sanders took over that. This is the text right here. It's The Glorious Gospel. And it's available online if you're interested in it from a company called Publishing Designs. They're the publisher for it. They continue to publish it now. It's about $10 or so if you're interested in picking it up. And we also have a copy available in the church library. So I just wanted to show you the text that we're using. And I also wanted to show you the schedule so you can see who's coming up here. This week, we're going to be talking about the gospel. Next week, we're going to be talking about the gospel of God. Gene Osborne's going to have that class. The week after that, the Gospel of Christ. Rod Huffman's going to lead us in that study. Then the Gospel of the Grace of God. Derwin is going to lead us through that. The Gospel of the Kingdom of God. Leslie Smith is going to have that one. The Gospel of Peace. Steve Simpson. The Gospel of Your Salvation. Chad Thompson's going to lead us in that study. And we save the best for last, Mr. Kim Bush. The Hope of the Gospel. And you can tell, if you're counting there, that's 8 weeks. That's not a full quarter, right? So what's going to happen after that this quarter, just so that you know, Larry has organized with some other preachers in the Brotherhood in the surrounding area to do another kind of summer series. And we have some questions that Larry is going to be asking of these men to come in here and teach. And if you didn't see, there was an email that went out about it and also a handout in your box. I hope you'll try to come for the month of August on Wednesday night and be able to have the opportunity to learn from those men as well. I'm excited about that. I think it's going to be a good thing. So as we get started, I wanted to ask this question. What is the gospel? So what do you think of when you hear the word gospel? Good news. Okay? There's a lot of that. A lot of good news. What else do we think of when we hear the word gospel? Now, I don't know if you guys remember this about me or not, but if you don't talk back to me, I'm going to start calling on Ken over and over again. He knows about this. Ken, what do you think of when you hear the word gospel? Okay? The death, the burial, and the resurrection of Christ. Which is the good news. Okay? So the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, okay? We use that word synonymously for those four books. Yes, we do. The life of Christ. Why the life of Christ, Mike? So if you couldn't hear Mike, and for anybody listening online, he said, it focuses on Christ's life while he was here, that 3 or 4 years there in his ministry, especially. Yes, Suzanne. So if you couldn't hear Suzanne, she said it's a payment of a debt that we owe. That's why we study it, that I owe, and also Suzanne owes. Yes, Robert. What's that?
Forgiveness.
Why is that gospel? He came to... Okay. Couldn't hear Robert. He came for forgiveness because he made that possible. Anyone else? Trey. So it sounds like you think of obligation when you think of the gospel. Excellent. I think we should think of that. Absolutely. Maybe we should think of it more than we do. Any other thoughts? And so we've kind of already touched on this a little bit, but what does the gospel mean for us? Obligation? Forgiveness? A debt has been paid on our behalf? There was a statement, I don't remember who said it. I don't remember if it was in Calvin's class or what, but I wrote this down. In my notes to bring up in this class. The gospel separates us from man and unites us with God. Do you agree or disagree with that? The gospel separates us from man and unites us with God. So it separates us from the world, Johnny said, but we have a responsibility to share that back with the world. So it breaks one connection and opens up another one? Anybody else have a reaction to that? Separates us from sin, something that man does and continues to do, something that we continue to do, but we should be separated from it. Does it unite us with some men? We're all united. What are we united by? The gospel. Amongst other things, we're united by the gospel. That's something I think is true. I would agree with this statement that the gospel does unite us with God, but the gospel will separate us from some men, especially men who lead lives of sin, who are, instead of professing Christ, they're professing the ways of the world as morality. All right, so what is the gospel? We've got to go back to the Greek here, and I'm not going to try to pronounce this. But there's the Greek word. And the reason why I wanted to show you this Greek word is to kind of just break it down. Sometimes we read words in the New Testament and they haven't been translated fully for us. This is one of those words that hasn't been translated all the way. It's just stayed gospel, kind of like words like baptism and things like that. But if we were to break it down to its parts, it means good and proclaim. Good news, good things, Strong says. Good tidings. It's interesting that the very concept of proclamation is baked into the word. Let me say that again. The very concept of proclamation is baked into the word gospel. And we'll talk about that some more here a few times in a few minutes. It's used 93 times in the New Testament, and no Hebrew word in the Old Testament is translated as gospel in any translation that I looked at. This is purely a New Testament word. It's a New Testament concept that we're going to see here. The gospel is nothing to be ashamed of. Terry, would you read that for us? Romans 1, verses 16 through 17. Do you think the world wants us in this room to be ashamed of the gospel of Christ? I only heard Cody whisper yes. Does anybody else think that? Does anybody else feel like that when you turn on the news or you watch a television show or a movie, the moral of the story a lot of times is to humiliate people of faith? I feel that way. The world wants us to be ashamed. Paul says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, because it's the power of God for salvation. Something we should not be ashamed of. Quite the opposite of that. So also, gospel is a word that's exclusively used for religious purposes. We don't talk about the gospel of NC State's football season next year. Well, we would never talk about that. Maybe the gospel of Alabama's football season next year, Ken. I can make fun of State because my wife went there. I had to watch it with her, so. But we don't use that word for other types of good news, right? It's only for religious good news. And consequently, the Jews don't use this word. Muslims don't use this word. Buddhists don't use this word. This word is limited only to Christians. It's a word that Christians use. And so it is a word in a way that can divide sometimes because it's a distinctly Christian religious word. And we also use it as an adjective. Tommy mentioned the four Gospels. We use that word for the four Gospels because they contain that life of Christ that Mike talked about. We have gospel meetings. We talk about gospel music, of gospel preachers. We even have a publication called the Gospel Advocate. There's gospel literature, there's probably all kinds of other things we use that word as an adjective of sometimes. So how does the Bible use the word gospel? I wanted to go through and kind of look at the different ways that we see the word gospel used in the Bible. The gospel of the kingdom is used four times. There's the gospel is being preached or proclaimed 40 times. Remember, it only shows up 93 times in the New Testament. And almost half of those times, it's somebody's preaching it. Somebody's proclaiming it. Somebody's teaching it. On the other side, we see a few times where people are hearing it and receiving it. The gospel being shared and proclaimed is very central to the concept. God has a gospel. It's the gospel of God. The gospel of Jesus. Or the gospel of Christ. We see that phrase coming up several times. We see the gospel is the word of truth. We see that twice. We see it's the gospel of peace in Ephesians. The gospel of your salvation in Ephesians again. We read that it's the gospel of grace in Acts. We just read a minute ago, Terry did for us, that the gospel is the power of God for salvation. The gospel is also something that is to be accepted. We're told to believe in the gospel, that there is truth of the gospel. I found this interesting as I was going through doing this study, that Paul claims it's his. He claims ownership of it on three occasions. I actually put those verses up there because I found that so odd. Anybody here ever corrected somebody who said, you know, my church is doing this? It's like, wait, it's not your church, right? I do that to my kids sometimes, and we don't want to be nitpicky about that, but language is important in how we describe things. And so I find it interesting that Paul says it's mine. He owns it. He feels like he owns it. And I think we can feel like it's our good news too. Not that we can go change it, but that we're invested with it. And that we're also entrusted with it. So Johnny talked about that, you know, once that the gospel has changed us, we are separated from man in one way, but now we're bound to man in another way. We're bound to man under obligation to God, under the command of Christ himself, to share the gospel. It's not optional. And it's something that comes with the gospel. We also read that it's not man's gospel. Contrary to it, you know, Paul saying it was his gospel, he didn't mean that it's mine, I made it, and it's good news about me. Paul meant that it was his, he had a share in it, it was entrusted to him. But it's not of man's invention. This isn't something that somebody sat down a couple thousand years ago and said, I got a good idea. This is going to be a good story. I'm going to write it down. And it's not something that we can change. Not something that we can set the parameters of. Paul talks about different gospels. And if you'll recall, what does he say about those different gospels? What was that? That they're not gospels at all. That's in Galatians chapter 1. Where he says, somebody has come to bewitch you, you foolish Galatians, with another gospel, right? Which is not another gospel at all. We just talked about that actually last quarter in the classroom class, if you were back there for that. But people can show up with different gospels. But Paul says, that's not a gospel at all. Labor in the gospel. The gospel requires work. Partnership in the gospel. Again, we're entrusted with it, but we're also partners in it. The gospel is to be obeyed. You know, that's interesting. We don't obey the good news about our football teams. We don't obey the good news about that new job. But something about the gospel that we're going to read about in the New Testament, there's some obedience that comes with it. There's good news that requires obedience. We also suffer for the gospel. Paul talks about that with Timothy. And we see that the gospel brings light and immortality. Who preaches the gospel in the Bible? I just showed one. Who preaches the Bible or the gospel in the Bible?
A lot of people.
A lot of people? Yeah, okay. Philip is one that's specifically named that he preaches. Who are some of the other ones that we see doing that? Stephen does.
Barnabas
goes with Paul in a lot of his missions. A lot of the men that Paul takes with, even though they're not explicitly named as preaching the gospel, I think it's safe to assume that's exactly what they were doing. Men like Timothy, Silas. We see lots of men like that. He did. So John the Baptist, he did have a different gospel in a way, didn't he? He was preaching leading up to something. We read that he was making straight the paths for Jesus to come. He was laying the groundwork. See Philip the evangelist. See Paul, of course. Paul's one, if you actually go through and do a word study on gospel, he's the one over and over again that talks about, I'm preaching, I'm proclaiming, I'm doing this, you should be doing that. Talks about it over and over again. There's one really important person that we haven't mentioned that preaches the gospel, though. Jesus. You guys remember that Sesame Street song? one of these things is not like the other. Jesus sticks out to me on this list. Why might Jesus stick out on this list? Because it was about him, okay? In a way, you know, Paul talked about it was his gospel, but he meant it in a different way. When Jesus is going to say it's my gospel, he really means this is my gospel. Absolutely. Is there any other reason that he might kind of stick out on this list? That's who salvation is through? Absolutely. He has a vested interest in it that no one else is ever going to have in that gospel. With Christ's gospel, where is it looking towards? The future or the past? The future. It's pointing to the future, things that are going to happen. With Paul's gospel, with the apostles' gospel, with Philip, with Barnabas, with Timothy, with Silas, all these men, their gospel is going to talk about things that have happened and also some things that are going to happen. But for things that have happened on earth, they're going to be talking about in the past. And that is a different thing there. So if you couldn't hear David said that the rest of these men up here were going to be preaching with the help of the Holy Spirit, and Jesus doesn't. We don't read that Jesus is filled with the Holy Spirit. That wouldn't seem to be something that conclusion that we could draw. Yeah, he's not being given revelation. He's making revelation, which is a very different thing, isn't it? That is a very different thing. That's an excellent point. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. And Ken, I believe you were alluding here just a couple minutes ago. So 1 Corinthians chapter 15, if you would read verses 1 through 11 with me. So 1 Corinthians 15, 1 through 11. And this is Paul speaking to the church in Corinth. Now I would remind you, brothers, of the gospel I preached to you, which you received, in which you stand, and by which you are being saved, if you hold fast to the word I preached to you, unless you believed in vain. For I have delivered to you as of first importance what I also received, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day in accordance with the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Cephas, then to the 12. Then he appeared to more than 500 brothers at one time, most of whom are still alive, though some have fallen asleep. Then he appeared to James, then to all the apostles. Last of all, as to one untimely born, he appeared also to me. For I am the least of the apostles, unworthy to be called an apostle because I persecuted the church of God. But by the grace of God, I am what I am. And his grace toward me was not in vain. On the contrary, I worked harder than any of them, though it was not I, but the grace of God that is with me. Whether then it was I or they, so we preach, and so you believed. So we see here, Paul is lining out. There's some other aspects of the gospel we could talk about he gets to early on, but I wanted to go to what he says about Christ. That Christ died for our sins in accordance with Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day, he appeared to the apostles and to hundreds of more people. And also that this was delivered to people who were unworthy. Paul gets down on himself a lot when he writes, doesn't he? And I think he's earned the right to do that because Paul did some pretty awful things. He did some pretty awful things. You know, I think it was in one of the classes recently we talked about that Paul, in his ministry, probably ministered to people, preached to people, whose family members he had persecuted. So someone did that to our parents, or our brothers and sisters. They threw him in jail because they believed in Jesus, and a couple years later they show up and want to talk about Jesus to me. That's a tough pill for any of us to swallow, wouldn't it be? And that's what Paul is doing. And in a way, Paul uses that to his advantage, though, right? Paul uses it to his advantage. And he says, he works harder than everybody. But it's not him. It's the grace of God working through him. Paul's a worker for the Lord. So here's a question for you. Can we accept Paul's statement here in 1 Corinthians 15, 1-11, as the final and complete statement of the gospel? I think this is a question that as I was reading and I'm preparing for this lesson, I asked myself. This is the text that Brother Lyon goes through here, and he talks about, and then he says there's more to it. And I stopped and said, no, wait. That is the gospel, right? But as we went through and we looked a few minutes ago, and we looked at all the different ways that the word gospel is used, I think when we box that word in and say, this is the gospel, this is the good news in the Bible, I don't think that's appropriate. If there's nothing else to the gospel, did Paul and Jesus teach and preach the same gospel? Because Jesus is teaching things, future tense, first of all, but he's also teaching about the kingdom. Paul doesn't mention anything about the kingdom here. There's more to the message, there's more to the gospel than just what Paul says here. So what are some things that are gospel, that are good news, that Paul doesn't mention in this list? Yes, sir. So, Brother Pons, you think that me having to do stuff is good news. That's not good news for my children when I tell them they have to do stuff. I don't tell my kids that. I know you don't tell your kids that. It's more like they come, Daddy, can we have ice cream? I say, no, you had it for lunch. You're not having it for dinner, too. Anybody ever show up to a job, your first day on the job, and there's no one there to tell you what to do? Mike, you look like you got a story there. I've been there. You ever show up to the job, and you're the only guy there who knows anything about what you're doing, and you're the new guy? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine showing up here to the world, not having some direction? I think that is good news that God has told us what to do. He's given us some instructions. For no other reason than we don't get do-overs in life. So I'd like someone who's got a little more wisdom than me to instruct me, who sees the big picture. What else is Paul not mentioning here in this little synopsis? He does go on there a little bit more. You know, I think it's important to talk about the context of how Paul is using this. The Corinthian church is a model church, and they have no problems at all, right? No. The Corinthian church has all kinds of problems. One of the problems they have is that they have this influence from the Sadducees that are coming in. If you recall the Sadducees, they're sad, you see, because they don't believe in the resurrection. And Paul is specifically talking in chapter 15, especially, about the resurrection. So that's why he's hammering on that. But let's read, who had 1 Corinthians 15, 50 through 58? Did I give that to you, Mike? Would you read that for us? So just a few verses over, 1 Corinthians 50, verses, or 15, 50 through 58. the good news that Paul is leaving off there, that he comes to the end of the chapter, is that we conquered death. Just like when Jesus is talking in John chapter 3 to Nicodemus, he says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, so that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have life everlasting." That's a central foundation. That's good news. That's very good news. So what I want us to think about as we go through this quarter is to open our minds to what the word gospel is and what the concept of gospel is, and to remember that the New Testament is full of gospel. It's full of good news. It doesn't stop at the end of John. Good news continues to flow throughout the gospel. Sometimes it's easier to talk about what something isn't, though. What isn't the gospel? It's not the gospel of miracles. It is not the gospel of miracles. What was the purpose of miracles? To confirm the word, to show the authority of the speaker. And was that always the purpose of miracles? The vast majority of the time, I think we can unequivocally say yes. Jesus is even explicit. For example, when he raises Lazarus from the dead, he says that he was glad that Lazarus had died and that he had a few days to get there so that people would see the miracle that he was going to perform. But there's also a couple miracles that Jesus just does, I think, because he loves people and he's compassionate. We see Jesus in Mark chapter 7 heals a deaf man, and also in Luke chapter 8, Jesus heals Jairus' daughter. What odd thing does Jesus do after both those events? He says, "Don't tell anybody." If Jesus is using those miracles only to show his power and to proclaim his message, then he's doing an interesting thing by not telling them. Now, we could make the case that he's showing his power to the people in the room, and maybe a couple of the apostles were there and would know about it. And I think there's some validity there. But Jesus does do miracles, I think, because he loves people too. He loves people. He has the power to heal. We see in the end of Matthew, Jesus talks about Jerusalem. He looks over the whole city and he says, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, I've longed to gather you to me as a mother hen does to her chicks." Jesus has compassion. He wants to help. But still, after all that, we don't read anywhere about the gospel of miracles. If you go look, gospel and miracles, where miracle doesn't show up in any verse of the Bible together. That's not what it's about. It's not about good news so that I can get over a sickness. It's not about good news that I can have something happen for someone I love or get something in an unnatural way. That's not part of the gospel. Another one is that it is not a gospel of prosperity. God has not promised us prosperity. Actually, we were promised something else. Christian, would you read John chapter 15, verses 18 through 21? And this is Jesus speaking here. John 15, verses 18 through 21. What is Jesus promising us as Christians, as those who follow? Persecution. He says the world's going to persecute us, but they'll still like us. They'll just be mean to us. No. The world's going to do what to us? Hate us. The world is going to hate us. Why will it hate us? Because it hated him first. We got to remember that. That's the gospel we've been promised. We weren't promised that we'll get nice houses and nice cars. Some of us are going to have those things. God will bless us for those. But are those gifts for us to enjoy? Well, yes. Solomon talks about if we can't enjoy the prosperity that we have, we'd be better off being a stillborn child. But those gifts are also ours to use for his glory and to use to bless other people as well. We may get prosperity, but we're not promised prosperity. It is not a gospel of prosperity. You do not send in money to the collection plate and you get home and your bank account has $100 more than you put in there. It just, that's not the gospel. Not the one we read about in the Bible. And we talked about this a little bit already, but it's not only what's from Matthew chapter 1 to the end of John. That's not all the gospel is. There is more good news in Acts, in the epistles, and there's good news in Revelation. There's some warnings in Revelation. There's some warnings. But there's good news in there too, if we're on the right side of those warnings. Absolutely, there's something there that we need to make sure that we're paying attention to. I know we're almost out of time here, and I'm going to get finished. That's great. One more thing the gospel isn't. It's not to be kept to ourselves. If you sat through Calvin's class on grace, he talked about a concept. I think he made it up himself, but I like it. I'm going to use it again. Spiritual opportunity hoarding. It's not to be kept to ourselves. It's not to say, I got the gospel. I found Jesus. I learned about him. I obeyed the gospel. I'm going to go to heaven. Good luck, everybody else. That's not what this is. It's not to be kept to ourselves. Like we talked about earlier, the word in itself, the word itself has the concept of proclaiming it in it. It's like trying to play basketball without a ball, just a basket. It doesn't work. The gospel doesn't work. Have you tried that before, Caleb? I see you back there shaking your head like you've done that before. The gospel doesn't work if it's not being proclaimed. And we also see, again, I wanted to bring this up one more time, that even the Bible itself seems to be screaming to us over and over again that the gospel begs to be preached and proclaimed, testified. It wants to be heard. It needs to be received. That is the gospel. Let's everybody turn over to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. I would like us to do something together. We don't usually do this kind of thing, but it's Wednesday night, and I'm only teaching once this quarter, so I can irritate you guys today. I want us to read Romans chapter 1, 16, aloud together. I want us to think about what it really means. I want us to feel it, and I want us to be convicted by this. So if you would, read with me Romans chapter 1, verse 16. And I just realize this may not work as well since we don't all have the same translation, do we? Well, I've got an ESV, so you guys are going to have to hang with me. That's pretty close to New American Standard, New King James. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God and salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also for the Greek. So, we are running out of time. Actually, we are out of time. No one has rung those bells yet. This is what happens when Gene Osborne's gone. Nothing works around here, does it? So next week, Gene's back, and we're going to be talking about the gospel of God. And so in deference to Gene, I know he would appreciate that I do this. I want to give you guys some homework. I want you to read Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. And I want you to think about the gospel of God. I want you to think about that God is the good news. That God is the gospel. Think about that. Read Romans 1, and please come back next week when Gene's going to talk to us about the gospel of God. Thank you very much for your attention, and thank you very much for your comments.